You may be seated. When will I learn to put the box up there?
Probably never.
Oh yeah, it's the message time. I kind of like having two tables up here. It's kind of fun. You can put stuff on this table or this table. So have you guys been enjoying the reading from the, what's it called? Seek, Grow, Love 2022. If you haven't been doing it, then look it up on, I don't know if it's in the bulletin or not. But we did have a list in the back table of reading a chapter a day, and it takes you through certain chapters. It's not every one, but it's one chapter per day, so 365 chapters a year. I came across an interesting spot from this past week. Some things that I didn't remember or I didn't put together in my head from all these years, as old as I am. And that's from Numbers 13, which is one of the chapters that we were supposed to read this week. It has sending out of the 12 spies, one from each of the 12 tribes. And each man is named in Numbers 13. And they're told to go into the southern part of the land of Canaan and then move up into the hill country. And they were to look for things. These are spies, remember. They're to look for things like, what is the land like? Does it produce well? Or are the crops too small? Are there a lot of trees there? Could you bring back some of the fruit so that we can see it? How are the cities there? Are they easy to get into, or do they have big walls around them like a fort would have? I thought of Malachi when I wrote that down. What does the people seem like? Are they strong or weak? Are there a lot of people or just a few? These are the questions that the rest of the people wanted to know what the promised land was like. So the spies were sent to check out the land that was promised. Israel was just trying to get to their destination, the land flowing with milk and honey, the land of Canaan. It was promised way back when Moses was called by the burning bush. It's kind of a funny way to put things. Moses was called by a burning bush. But that's how the story reads. The bush that was on fire talked to him when he walked by, when he went to see why the bush was on fire. Kind of a fun story. So the burning bush, in relation to what we're talking about today, was probably 2 or 3 or 4 years before. I don't know how long Moses took to get the people freed from Egypt, but from the burning bush, he went to Egypt to free the people. So I believe in the story from today, the spies ready to go up and look at the land of Canaan, that there were only 2 Passovers observed. So that would indicate that it would have been 2 years, maybe 3, from the time that they were escaped from Egypt. I'll say escaped. So it was only 2 or 3 or 4 years since the burning bush when this event takes place. By this time, it seems like Israel, even though it's only been 2 or 3 years, was tired of camping. That the main part of the people were just tired of it. They didn't want to camp anymore. Remember, they've been camping out and the cloud and the pillar would move. At night it was a pillar of fire. In the daytime they had a big cloud. If the cloud moved, they would have to pull everything up and move with the cloud. And that was their protection, but it was also their guidance. So the spies were up in the land for 40 days. The land was about maybe 290 miles north and south. And 60 to 80, depends on where you, it even gets narrower than that, but 60 to 80 miles wide. So the land of Canaan was about that big, and they had 40 days to go up there and look around, which doesn't seem like too much time when you're on foot. So I don't think it was, I think it was pretty intensive. That's a lot of ground to cover. And it also appears to me that these men traveled together. And every group has its slow guy. Usually when the group I'm in, I'm the slow guy. Do you have a group, a slow guy in your group whenever you go on a group outing? It's Veronica and her family. It's Ben and their family. Every group has a slow person. So 40 days is still the clock. Well, the spies got back and brought fruit. They brought figs, pomegranates, and grapes. The grapes were thriving well enough that it took two men and a pole through one cluster of grapes. That's how they carried it back from the land of Canaan. I don't know if it was over their shoulder, if they carried it under their arm, but I've seen different pictures of this. And the one that most amazed me was, I'm imagining these grapes are like this basketball size, but the pictures I've seen, they weren't. They were just regular grape size, but the clusters were huge. And so they had so many branches on them, and that was a funny looking picture. But that's what it says, that it took two guys and a pole to bring them back. I wonder how many of them got eaten on the way back. Because if they got it halfway through the trip, they'd be carrying them for 20 days. So, all this has been according to Numbers 13 and 14. And you think Numbers is a boring book, just full of numbers. But it's not. It's got some intriguing stories in there. So when these men got back from their 40-day journey, they began to tell their stories of the journey that they just had. Wow, it really was a land flowing with milk and honey. But I don't think it actually did. Can you imagine rivers of honey? Like everything would be stuck, or milk. It would turn sour in a day. That would be kind of gross. So I don't think it actually means it was milk and honey, but King James does that to us. Maybe it's a translation, maybe not only King James, but sometimes they have phraseology that's kind of odd from the way we say things now. It just means that it was prosperous and plentiful. The land flowing with milk and honey. Then the spies began to explain how big the cities are and how really big the walls were. And the people look so strong. Why wouldn't they be? They've been eating milk and honey. So evidently that makes you big and strong and tall. The sons of Anak are there. Anak was the forefather of the Anakim. It's a tribe of tall people or giants that lived in southern Canaan. And not only were they big, but Joshua 14 tells us that their cities were very fortified. So these are not only giants, they're giants with bigger walls and thicker walls and bigger spears and faster horses. While 10 of the 12 spies were still talking, Caleb, who is from the Judah tribe, interrupted their conversation and he said, sounds kind of like me interrupting a conversation, "We should by all means go up and take possession of this land, for we shall surely overcome it." And when he says up, the group of people that was sent out the spies was below Israel. Israel's shaped kind of like this book that's not as colorful. Let's do this side. It's tall and skinny, but they were down here. And so they went up into the land to spy on it. It says that in Numbers 13:30 that he should surely be able to overcome the land, Caleb. But the men who had gone up with him continued to say, so they re-interrupted his interruption, "We are not able to go up against these people, for they are too strong for us. The land through which we have gone in spying it out is a land that devours its inhabitants." That left a funny imagination to me. The land itself ate you up if you tried to go in there. And all the men we saw were of great size. And we became like grasshoppers in our own sight, so we were in their sight. That says that in Numbers 13, 32, and 33. There's no way we can beat these guys. We're only grasshoppers. We're only up to their knees. I don't know if it was that much difference in size or if they just didn't want to go. So the spies gave a bad report of the promised land to the sons of Israel. And that night, all the children of Israel wept. That's something that was promised a long time ago. And that was the point of their journey. And they got there, and they gave it a bad report. Their frame of mind became very negative. Their reasoning became, what's the difference if we stay in Egypt as slaves and we die? Or we travel for 2 or 3 years, and then we die at the hand of giants. Woe is us. Let's just go back to Egypt, they said. And it even gets worse than that. In fact, in Numbers 14:4, it says, the children of Israel wanted to replace Moses and Aaron and go back to Egypt under new leadership. And this caused Moses and Aaron to fall on their faces before all the congregation. Wonder what that looks like. Like this? It might look like that. I was worried about the cement floor. But they did. They fell on their faces in front of the whole group. And Moses and Aaron were used to communicating what God had to say for the people, but also judging the people and settling disputes and all those kinds of things. So when they heard that they wanted to replace them and send other people up or take the people back to Egypt, they fell on their faces. So I looked up in some different commentaries, and here's one that I read, and the name of this one is Pulpit Commentary. I haven't heard of that one before, but I read probably 6 or 8 of different ones of the commentaries about this verse only. It's Numbers 14, verse 5, and I kind of wanted a little bit of idea about it, and the things that I read varied quite a bit. And this is the one that I thought best fit what I thought. I don't know if that's a good reason to use it or not, but this is kind of how I think they felt. Moses and Aaron fell on their faces after making insufficient efforts to reason with the people, or rather with their leaders. This comes out of Deuteronomy 1, 29 and 31. It was not, however, in this case, an attitude of intercession, which had happened before. When God was angry with the people would fall on their faces to try to get God to change his mind or something on that order. But it was the instinctive action of those who await a silent horror or a catastrophe, which they see to be inevitable. They already know it's going to happen. God leads them to the promised land and the people reject it. They know it can't be good. So they fall on their faces. It testifies to all who saw it that they were overwhelmed with shame and sorrow in view of the awful sin of the people and the terrible punishment which must follow. So I thought that was a pretty good commentary, and it pretty much lined up with how I thought that Moses and Aaron would feel in this case. And then, right after that, or at the same time, Joshua and Caleb, two of the spies, tore their clothes. So I looked in the commentary again, but I didn't use the same one. This one I used Jameson Fawcett Brown, which is a Bible commentary that's kind of old. Here's what it says about verse 6 in chapter 14. Joshua and Caleb were of them that searched the land. They rent or tore their clothes. So that when they rent their clothes, it's the same as tearing their clothes. They would tear their clothes. I mean, I don't want to tear my clothes. I fell on my face, but I don't want to tear my clothes. I thought about it, but I don't have something to tear. The two honest spies testified their grief and horror in the strongest manner. So the tearing of the clothes was a sign of mourning in the Old Testament and in the New Testament. When something bad happened, someone died or something like that, the people tore their clothes. They were in grief and horror at the mutiny against Moses and the blasphemy against God. While at the same time, they tried by a truthful statement to persuade the people of the ease in which they might obtain possession of such a desirable country, provided they did not, by their own rebellion and ingratitude, provoke God to abandon them. So they saw what was going on, just as Moses and Aaron did. The people didn't see, but these four did. And they reacted in that way. Seems like it was a pretty tense moment, that moment, when Moses and Aaron and Joshua and Caleb realized that the people are pretty flat out rejecting God in a big way, right in public. It wasn't a trick, it wasn't even a secret, it was right in public. I want to read some of the story from Numbers 14, because I can't put it in better words. Whoops, it's this way. This is all out of the weekly reading, by the way. Not to put out an ad, but it's a pretty good... I remember Numbers being full of names, but this one's full of stories. Numbers 14, verse 8. I want to start there and go down to a little ways. Verse 20 at least. If the Lord is pleased with us, this is Joshua and Caleb speaking. If the Lord is pleased with us, then he will bring us into the land, and right after they tore their clothes, or while they were tearing their clothes, he will bring us into the land he is giving and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not fear the people of the land, for they shall be our prey. Their protection has been removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them. But all the congregation said to stone them with stones. And the glory of the Lord appeared in the tent of meeting to the sons of Israel. So remember, I told you about the cloud and the fire. Well, when the people said they wanted them stoned, the cloud appeared. So God was getting involved. The Lord said to Moses, "How long will this people spurn me? How long will they not believe in me despite all the signs which I performed in their midst? I will smite them with a pestilence and dispossess them, and I will make you a nation greater and mightier than they." But Moses said to the Lord, "When the Egyptians hear of it, for by your strength you brought up this people from their midst, and they will tell it to the inhabitants of this land, that they have heard that you, O Lord, are in the midst of this people, for you, O Lord, are seen eye to eye while your cloud stands over them. And you will go before them in a pillar of a cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. Now if you slay this people as one man, then the nations who have heard of your fame will say, 'Because the Lord could not bring his people into the land which he promised them by an oath, therefore he slaughtered them in the wilderness.' But now I pray, let the power of the Lord be great, just as you have declared. For the Lord is slow to anger and abundant in loving kindness, forgiving iniquities and transgression. But he will by no means clear the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children to the third and fourth generations. Pardon, I pray, the iniquity of this people, according to the greatness of your loving kindness. For just as you have forgiven this people from Egypt even until now, so the Lord said, I have pardoned them according to your word." It's kind of a gutsy thing on Moses' part, because God wanted to just destroy him, give him a pestilence, and let Moses be the person that would inherit the land and his offspring. And then down in verse 22, we'll begin again. Surely all the men who have seen my glory and signs which I performed in Egypt and in the wilderness and have put me in the test these 10 times have not listened to my voice shall by no means see the land which I swore to their fathers, and shall any of those who spurn me see it. But my servant Caleb, because he has a different spirit and has followed me fully, I will bring into the land which he entered, and his descendants shall take possession of it. Now the Amalekites and the Canaanites live in the valleys. Turn tomorrow and set out to the wilderness by the Red Sea. And the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, how long shall I bear with this evil congregation who are grumbling against me? I have heard complaints of the sons of Israel, which they're making against me. Say to them, as I live, says the Lord, just as you have spoken in the hearing, so I will surely do to you. Your corpses shall fall in the wilderness, even all your numbered men, according to the complete number from 20 years old and upward, who have grumbled against me. Surely you shall come into the land which I swore to you, settle you, except you will not come to the land which I swore to you, except Caleb, the son of Jephah, and Joshua, the son of Nun. Those were the only two that were 20 years or older that were able to continue on into the promised land. Your children, however, whom you said would become prey, I will bring them in, and they shall know the land which you have rejected. But as for you, your corpses shall fall in the wilderness. Your sons shall be shepherds for 40 years in the wilderness and shall suffer for you for your unfaithfulness until your corpses lie in the wilderness. According to the number of days which you spied out in the land, 40 days, for every day you shall bear guilt for a year. Even 40 years you shall know my opposition. I, the Lord, have spoken. Surely I will do this to the evil congregation who are gathered together against me in this wilderness. They shall be destroyed, and there they shall die. And that's Numbers 14 up to verse 35. And verse 39 says, when Moses spoke these words to the sons of Israel, they mourned greatly. Which I guess they could, I can understand that. But even after this happened, the children of Israel still chose to disobey God. I mean, almost immediately. They told Moses, oh, we're just going to go up and take the land then because God gave it to us. And God said, no, I've already given you the curse of the wait for 40 years. If you go up there, you're going to be slaughtered. And some of them went up there and were slaughtered. They still chose to disobey God almost immediately, and they were punished for it. As a result of their disobedience, all of this is called disobedience. I think that's something we need to consider. The not believing God is called disobedience in the case of the Israelites. They saw all these things, and then when he would say something else, they wouldn't believe it. That was called disobedience. Because of their disobedience, the children of Israel wandered 40 more years in the wilderness. One day for each year, the spies were checking out the land. I had forgotten that. I didn't remember. That's why it was 40 years. So it's kind of nice to go back, even though you've read it somewhere in your life. When you go back and review, there's some details that come back. I also forgot that the children of Israel had called on the stoning of Joshua and Caleb. I didn't remember that at all. Maybe it was for Moses and Aaron too, but I know it was at least the two. I don't know why it got so bad. Maybe was it mob mentality? I think we kind of have that around now. But as we're leading up to the subject of encouragement, I had no intention of using this story for its platform. But the more I thought about it, I found encouragement in here. The 12 tribes, or the 12 tribes, the 12 spies were all chosen, one from each tribe. That's an indication that these should have been very savvy men with good qualifications. There were only 12 chosen from the 3 million plus people. Many people have estimated that's about how many there were traveling through the wilderness by the time they got that far. I'm not sure for sure, but it doesn't matter. 12, only 12 were chosen, and they were chosen. All of these men were raised at the same time and in the same conditions. They were all from the same group, the children of Israel. And on their spy adventure, they all saw the same things. It probably was an adventure, too, to go up there and spy around and see what you can find and not get caught. I don't know how they did that, but they did. And they got back, and it took them 40 days. All of them did not have the same reaction, however, even though they all saw the same things. In the case of what they perceived while spying, 10 were pessimistic about what they saw. Compared to what they thought the children of Israel could do against what they saw in the promised land. They said, there is no way we can win any war here. While the two, on the other hand, saw something different. I was waiting for the she had a wart. These 12 people all experienced the same events. But they had different perspectives on what happened before, what they had been through in their previous adventure on the whole trip out of Egypt. What caused the 10 to doubt and the 2 to believe? I don't really understand why the 10 doubted. It might have only been 3 years or so since they saw the Red Sea parting. Don't you think if you saw that you knew that God could help you through pretty much anything? It's not that long ago, but maybe they were that tired of camping, I don't know. And they saw other miracles after the Red Sea parting too. It wasn't just that. There was all kinds of things that happened. In verse 24 in Numbers 14, it says, "But my servant Caleb, because he had a different spirit and followed me fully, I will bring into the land which he entered, and his descendants shall take possession of it." So Caleb and I'm sure Joshua's attitudes were different than the others. They were paying attention to God and what he did for the people. They remembered all the things that he had done, the parting of the Red Sea and all those things. So small an audience. We saw only 4 people react in this account. Moses, Aaron, Caleb, and Joshua. I'm going to say that these men were encouraged by the kindness and mercy of God. Enough encouraged to stand up when they thought God is not someone to disrespect or forget his grace. Thinking back at all the things that they went through to get where they were. Remember, all these guys were slaves in Egypt making bricks and being oppressed more and more 3 years earlier, maybe 4, not that long. I think you could remember that, couldn't you? God's miracle for these people encouraged at least those 4. I can't believe that there weren't more that felt the same way. I'm sure there were. Since the 12 of them were from the same school, I think they all had the same encouragement. But 10 did not take it. They saw it, but they didn't take it. Only 2 took it. Only 2 took encouragement from the things that God has showed them before. I think optimism and pessimism are very closely related to what I'm talking about. Encouragement, optimism, pessimism. What's the opposite of encouragement? I don't know. What? Yeah. Discouraged is something that the same person would take, but I'm in an active role. I don't know, something to think about. Optimism and pessimism has pretty quick, whatever that word is, where they're opposites, not homonyms, antonym. I can listen to a person communicating with me, and I can choose how to react. I can either ignore it, or I can take it as a blessing. I can see how encouragement can be a proactive response. Like in Hebrews 10, 23 and 24, it says that we should stimulate one another to love and to good deeds. These are actions. It's active encouragement. Do you think the children of Israel got too caught up in "it's just another day in the wilderness" to remember the miracles that God had done for them to bring them to that point? Kind of like pretty easy to do now, isn't it? There's so much going on. I mean, you can't even see the things that are given to you because of all the things that are blocking. They're in the way. So many things that happen. By the way, do you think Moses encouraged God to save Israel in this account? When God was going to smite them with a pestilence and dispossess them, but Moses talked God out of it? Was that encouragement? Can God even be encouraged? I think so. So, this week I got a call from Ron Macy. And we talked for, I don't know, maybe a half an hour. And I was very surprised. In fact, when the phone rang, it said Macy on there. And we visited and he called, and Terry's been a little under the weather, and he has as well, pretty much the whole time they've been down there. I don't know if you guys know that or not, but I'm telling you now. He's had some physical trouble that he thinks he's on top of, and it's behind him now. Terry has had vertigo here, but she has it worse there. I don't know why. Maybe the warmer weather. I don't know. But we talked about that. We talked about what was going on up here, and he was kind of hemming and hawing around a little bit. And then he said, "Really, what I wanted to call you for is," and then before that he said that, he asked, you know, how things are going and things like that. And I told him about the meeting that we're having tomorrow, about how we're, some of the people from different groups in the area are going to get together and take preaching lessons from Jason Turner to maybe help, since I'm not a preacher. I don't even know what I'm doing up here. And so we're doing that as a positive thing to try to keep things going and going well and improve and things like that. So he just couldn't wrap his head around that we were doing that. He goes, "Really, what I called for was to encourage you, because it's been a while since we've been there, and I know the situation probably wasn't the best that it could have been when things happened when they left and compared to when we moved and all that kind of thing." And if you'd remember the first sermon that I preached this year, it was about the anxiety that things like that cause. And you're going along and something happens and you think, "Oh no, this is the end of the world." So I preached that sermon already. But he called this week. I don't know how long ago that is. A couple months. So his reason for calling was to encourage what we have. But he said, "You know, I think I'm encouraged because I called you, but yet I called to encourage you." So because he said that, it made me think, you know, things aren't that bad. We are doing some strides to improve and to continue on and to grow and all those things that are related with that. So I thought that was a good thing. When I first saw that name on the phone, I thought, "Oh no, here's Ron." But I could have looked at it that way. I could have said, "Oh, he's just, I could have not answered the phone because I knew who it was." But I didn't. And I can take it in a negative way or I can take it in a positive way. I came away with a very positive feeling that genuinely they were concerned and wanted to encourage us. But yet, because of what's going on, they were encouraged, or he was encouraged. So I think that's kind of how we need to be, is as far as how we look at things that people do for us and take the encouragement. And that's the name of the message is taking encouragement. And Jennifer talked and I talked about what the title would be. And I wanted that take in there because I think it's an active, proactive thing. The encouragement we need to take. The 12 spies all had the same availability, but two of them took the encouragement and brought it into their hearts, into their lives. They saw what God does for them, and they remembered it, and they remembered that he can continue doing that, where the 10 did not remember that. So I'd like to close with turning to Philippians. It's in the Old Testament, or the New Testament, not the Old. Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians. Philippians 2, and there are four verses that I think are good verses. And by chance, Lynn in her group used these verses. They're the last verses used. And I chose these verses as well, not knowing that those are the same verses that Lynn put in the group. Philippians 2, verses 1 through 4. Therefore, if any encouragement in Christ, if there is any encouragement in Christ, if there is any consolation of love, if there is any fellowship of the Spirit and any affection and compassion, make my joy complete by being of the same mind, maintaining the same love, united in spirit, intent on one purpose. Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, regard one another as more important than yourself. Do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also look out for the interests of others. And I kind of think that that's the bottom of the 12 spies. The decision was 10 were kind of selfish and 2 weren't. So I think all these things tie together very, very nicely. So let's close with song number